It's the big yawn.
Oh, we have fun in here. Summer breakfast. And a man who makes me smile more than most is Hamish McLaughlin. Good morning, Hamish. Oh, Hammer, come in. How are you, my friend? No, he's
well.
Oh, here he is. He's there. How are you, Hamish?
Third time you've had to ask. I'm still. Hello, Al. Good morning to you.
Good morning,
Emma. Now, but we need to get this. The Al claims he was one of your great producers over the journey.
I didn't say that.
Do you remember having worked with this individual?
Yes. So, Danny Frawley didn't ask me, but he told me when he was on the board of HRV that I had to host the Inter Dominion one night. And I said, Danny, I don't think I'm even going to be in Victoria. And in usual Danny Frawley fashion, he said, I don't care what you're doing, cancel it. I'll be there with Anita. They're the best team in the world producing it. And in walked Trent Mason-Helder. And at that point in time, Trent was about 11 years of age. And he said, what am I doing here? Danny just made me come. I said, we're in the same boat. Let's get on with it. So it was good fun, actually. It was about 5 or 6 years ago. And that was not long after Danny and I had a horse that ran at Yarra Valley, and we arrived, and it was a $2 favourite, and there was a horse that Greg Sugars was driving at about $5. By the time the race started, Greg's horse was favourite, and we'd drifted. Anyway, I think we finished second, and Greg's won. Danny thought it was some sort of a sting, so he took it upon himself to abuse everyone at Yarra Valley, including Greg. At the end of the day, he had been fined $5,000, told to do an anger management course, and had to step down from the board for a while. It was quite a day at Yarra Valley. We were just talking about temperatures. It was about 49 degrees, and Danny passed out on the way home as I was driving, so it was great.
Oh, you've told me that story before. It's one of my favourites. Dee Frawley. Danny, you're actually on the board.
I was hiding. So as he was abusing Greg Sugars and Strappers, and I was hiding behind a tree thing. There's going to be cameras here. Where are you, McLaughlin? That'd be right. Hiding behind a tree just when I need help. I said, Danny, you're a board member, man. Let's just take it quiet. And he started abusing me as equally as he was abusing Greg Sugars.
Now, you're the hostess with the mostest. You were at Cathedral a couple of nights ago and got to spend some time with Cam Smith, Adam Scott, Mark Leishman. Give us an insight into Cam Smith's world now that he is a superstar of Live and obviously a major winner.
He's pretty relaxed, I've got to say. So a major winner that signed with Live, who's getting married in the next week or so, to his fiancée Chanel. He was walking around mullet flowing in a Broncos polo top. It was like he was trying to buy a ticket to watch the golf. He's the most relaxed individual. And have you been to Cathedral, Scotty?
No.
We've got to. It is unbelievable. So David Evans had an idea that he wanted to turn some sheep and cattle paddocks into one of the best golf courses on the planet. He was told by everyone that he asked that he shouldn't do it because they can't, you know, survive. And I think Lloyd Williams and Lindsay Fox had an intervention with him and took him out for lunch and said, we're hearing that this is what you're going to do. He said, yes. And they said, under no circumstances can you do it. And Lloyd Williams, I think, actually showed him the monthly operational budget from Capital, which scared him, but he did it anyway. Greg pulled it all together and he's created this extraordinary course. And on Monday night, ahead of the second Cathedral Invitational, they had a dinner and an auction for the Adam Scott Foundation. And Mark Leishman, Jeff Ogilvy, Adam Scott, Cam Smith, and Kip Popat, who's the number one all-abilities player in the world. He's got cerebral palsy, had 10 major operations, started playing basically golf with his crutches when he was young. And then by the time of he was 14, he was scratched. A couple of years later, he's plus four. He's the most extraordinary player you've ever seen. But Mark Leishman and Cam Smith are talking about the Live Tour. And when they were approached, they thought it was, you know, sort of a bit of a hoax.
Yeah.
And I thought, this might actually happen. So Cam and Mark sort of did the deal. Mark said, take me with you. He said, what do you mean? He goes, well, they're going to come at you. You're a major winner. I'm just an also-round. Make sure if you get asked, it's a package deal. So they said, if you get asked, you've got to bring me. And if I get asked, I've got to bring you. So they said, we did this package deal where the people that were doing it were sort of going, okay, well, we haven't done a package deal before, but yeah, if you've got to take the kid from Warner, we'll take him. And he was talking around, you know, the tour gets pretty stressful. When he was trying to get his, they call it Q school, trying to qualify one year, Leish finally gets qualified and he goes out and they sort of go on a bit of a tear. He was flying back from wherever the Q school was. It was a 15-hour flight. And he thought, there's no way they'll let me on this flight. I'm so drunk and disorderly. Anyway, he gets on. And he passes out immediately. He thinks, if I just sit here quietly, maybe they'll let me fly back to Melbourne. And he's sitting there, and then he feels his shoulder being rubbed. He goes, oh, my God, they're onto me. They said, oh, Mr. Leishman, you're going to have to get off the plane. He said, no, I'm going to be okay. And he said, bear in mind, it's a 15-hour flight, and you're going to wait for another one. He said, Mr. Leishman, you are going to have to get off the plane. He goes, no, I'm going to be fine. They said, Mr. Leishman, please. He goes, no, please let me. Just don't hit. We're in Melbourne. He'd flown 15 hours and had not once been conscious.
Jeez, that's a good
effort. Great result, isn't it?
That's good drinking to get to that point.
Now, pretty good performance. You're in Melbourne, Mr. Leishman.
Speaking of flying, you're about to do the same, heading over to Europe. How did all this come about? Where are you headed and when do you leave?
Leave next week, head to Europe, going to have a year with the kids living overseas. It came about, Trent, because I think over the last few years, I look in the mirror and there's not a young man looking back like there used to be. So I thought things are getting a bit long in the tooth. And I've always wanted to have 1 year where I'm completely committed to Soph, my wife and the three kids. And it just came about that Seven lost the Olympics. It's like, okay, I don't have to be doing that next year. And it's the last year of the old AFL contract. And I asked Lewis Martin, I said, I'd love to take the family away for a year and just travel and have the 1 year that I've always dreamt about. He goes, you're mad. I said, well, what do you mean? And then I explained it to him. And he goes, that sounds like the best year of all time. what does it look like? I said, well, I'd love to go before Christmas and have a year away, because my eldest daughter is in her last year of primary school, and after that I've got a kid in secondary school until 2034. So it's like, this is the year. So they pretty good on skis over the last few years. They've been mucking around on skis, and Miller's pretty slick downhill, and then Indy, the daughter's pretty fast as well, and then Lex, the third one, just looks for dinosaurs everywhere. He's not really into anything much.
So I like his work.
We're going to start in the winter with a bit of snow, and we'll pick off things throughout the year. They'll go to an international school, which is part of the choosing the town we're in France. It's called Mougins. So it's 30 minutes or so from the Nice airport. It's got an international school there, so the kids can go and meet other kids speaking English rather than battle the whole time. And I can be on a plane. I'll come back and do round 1, 2, 3, Brown on grand final, and I'll come back and do Magic Millions. So I'm going to come back for sort of 8 days, 3 times. That would probably save the marriage, to be honest, which would be good, and also pay some hot chocolate bills around Europe. And I was just thinking what the best things to do. I said to the kids, you can all have one sort of trip, just you and I. So Indy, who's we've been to the Aussie Open a few times, the only time we've ever been to the Aussie Open, 3 times, every time Rafa's played and every time Rafa's won in 4 or 5. So she said, let's go watch Rafa at Roland Garros tick.
Nice.
Miller's, she wants to do some stuff in Paris. She's a, because she'll be on the mountain. So she said, can I exclude the mountain stuff? Yep. So she's going to go and look at the Louvre and other few things. And then Lex, the 7-year-old, he said, they have dinosaurs in Egypt.
Egypt?
I said, why Egypt? He goes, I was watching Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, and I think they're in Egypt, and they found some stuff. I said, well, we can certainly, you know, sort of workshop that one, but maybe stay a bit closer to home if we can. But it'll be, there's, in Siena, they have that amazing Palio, which is a horse race in the square, and yeah, Ascot and Wimbledon and, you know, Roland Garros, and the Tour de France goes past the front door, basically, of where we are. Every month there's something. And bizarrely, Scott, I'll shoot you where we're staying. There's a spare room in the place in front. I now have a list of people that are dropping in from sort of day one through to the day we leave at Christmas time. Buck said the other day, he goes, how many can I bring? I said, what do you mean? He goes, well, can I bring the kids and, you know, Brody? And I said, yeah. And he goes, I reckon I'll be there sort of October through November.
Dear me. You told me when we talked about this a month ago that there was one dream, we're not sure whether you can pull it off, but potentially have the phone off, maybe only check at night, phone off all day.
That's what we spoke about. So I said to my wife the other day, she does all the admin. I do the financing, she does admin. So she said, where are you going? I said, financing. She goes, okay, well, I'll do the admin. So she was in the Telstra shop the other day, and she said, my husband would like to leave his phone in Australia on the benchtop and come back a year later. And the guy goes, old play. I said, well, so I said, what was the outcome? Because if I could just get a French or a, you know, phone and have messages come through, she goes, you can do it. You can have messages forwarded to your iPhone or your laptop or European. You can have your Australian number go straight to voicemail, but still be able to check it if you want. So there's some options. I just got to be brave enough to do it. And I'll let you know on Friday next week when I fly what the outcome is, Scotty. I'll text it for you.
Right. I'd love that. How good would it be?
Yeah.
Hey, Michelle.
It's hard to believe that you could do it. I've had a phone, I reckon, since second year of uni, which for me was 1995. And you've sort of been attached to it ever since. It's been so reliant on it. It's like, could you actually just have a week in Europe where you don't have a phone on you at all? That's a plan. The other bloke, Scotty, that said to me, you've got to do this, is Rob Sitch.
Oh, yeah.
I knew that he'd had 7 months off with his family. I'd read about it. So I rang him and said, can you counsel me on this? And he said, there's a couple of things. One is 7 months. It's not long enough. It just goes, you know, in a blink of an eye, be longer. The other thing is that what they did is they kept travelling. They never really stopped anywhere. He said, I wish in hindsight we'd settled down. And the other thing is, on day six, it was going so badly, Jane Kennedy, his wife, said we had to have a family meeting. We had to sit the kids down and say, are we going home or are we going on? And they said, we're going on. So I'm expecting in the first 10 days or so, there's going to be a complete meltdown somewhere. So I'll text you how many family meetings we have, Scotty, on the 12-month journey. I guess it'll be about once a fortnight to a month, 24.
Hey,
are we going on? Yes.
Hamish, you love your racing, as we know. I'd imagine you'll find the opportunity to head to Shaunty or Longchamp throughout the journey?
100%. Like, the arc is, you know, on the bucket list. Unequivocally, I'll get there. Every time I watch the races and I watch the Shaunty races, all I watch is the stables behind.
Yeah.
I would love to, if I can, get to Shaunty and actually get through the whatever it is. I assume they're still stables or whatever it is. I'd love to go and have a look at that. But I think Ross Stevenson and I on That's Racing have a bit of a thing. How many racetracks have you been to?
Yeah, yep.
I'm going to try and pick as many off as possible. I'll drop the kids at school and just look for the local Ballarat. They go, they're running at Ballarat equivalent today. You can go by yourself. Okay, fine.
Hammer, before we let you go, we could talk forever, but what's been your favourite racing moment of this year? You know, the season's about to close down. Throughout the year of 2023, what grabbed you the most?
There's two. I'm walking around. I live down on the peninsula, Scotty, as you know. Two paddocks over, Anthony and Sam Friedman, where they live. And I see them a lot. Sammy comes and has a year there. I used to love two things. I'm a very big family man. My three brothers were all best men at each other's weddings. Dad's coming over today because he won't see the kids for a year. The thought of training with your father or your brother in that sort of environment, I just find just extraordinary. To win the Caulfield Cup and the Melbourne Cup together, Ant texts Sam and says, that went well. Like, the sort of the dryness of Ant, you know, Sam being the up-and-comer, but then Mark Zara having to, you know, make the call, am I jumping off? I just love that whole scenario. The world's trying to win the race, and Sam and Ant living two paddocks overdue with a super horse. I really love that. And the other bit that I think you'll pick up on, Scotty and Trent, because you knew my relationship, Monica Sid lives on the same road, on Foxy's Road. She's a trainer, did a lot of pre-training for Weary, and she's a picnic trainer. When Dean and I said we're going to win the Balnarring Cup, we said, okay, perfect. And she said, and I would do the training and Dean would give me the program. But in the last fortnight, you had to have it with a trainer, so with Monica. And then Dean passed away and we finished sort of midfield in the Balnarring Cup. And she said to me, after he passed, we will win the Balnarring Cup with a horse in Dean's colours.
So fantastic.
Last year, we had a horse run in his colours, ran second, and Dean was around on January 26th, and he said, after I go, because he knew he was going to pass away, after I go, keep running it in that colours, finish the dream off for me. So we bought a little mare called Red Stiletto to win the Balnarring Cup. She ran she was nominated at Yay, and they had to abandon the races. So then she had a first start at Hillsville and won. And now that was the first time that Dino's colours had won since he passed. And the plan is to go January 26th and win the Balnarrin Cup. So winning in Dean's colours last weekend, and the Freedman's winning without a fight, doing the double.
Two crackers, Hammer. We will be watching with interest on the 26th of January. Good luck. If we don't speak to you, hopefully we won't, because we can't get hold of you. Have a wonderful time. We've got Paul Gow on the line. Paul, who has been taking part in the Cathedral Invitational. Good morning, Paul.
Yeah, morning, guys.
Take us through this course. Greg Norman designed, I mean, everyone who's been there and looked at and played on it just raves about it.
Yeah, awesome course. You know, Norman doesn't do a lot of golf courses, but Dave Evans, the owner, talked him into this one. And it's a beautiful parcel of land up here at Cathedral Lodge, and it's in two paddocks, basically, over a hill, and he's connected to the two paddocks together and made a magnificent golf course. It's in extremely good condition. It's quite a playable golf course. So it's not one, a golf course that bashes you up at all, and hence why Adam Scott shot 8-under yesterday around it. But it's just a real pleasant golf course.
Is it based on any in particular, or has it got is it its own sort of thing?
No, it's got its own thing. It's got its own character about it. And Norman spent a lot of time here and just walking the hills and seeing holes and doing what architects do, I guess, and spending all hours here and seeing what shapes they were and using the topography of the land and all that sort of stuff. And he's done a great job. But it's got a real country feel about it. So it's not a real Melbourne or a Kingston Heath or a Victoria golf club. It's got its own feel, but challenging in spots, but some beautiful golf holes that run through some valleys, and you could be anywhere in the world. It's just quite amazing.
Good morning to you, Paul. Thanks for your time, as always. And we've got a star-studded field as well, both in the men's and women's. There's some outstanding Australian golfers there in action today.
Oh, there sure is. This event has grown. You know, it started as just a member pro, with just a few pros some 5 years ago. But then when David had the vision to take it to the next level, Adam Scott and Mark Leishman come in last year with Kari Webb, and it was a great event. And then this year we've got Cameron Smith and Nicholas Colsart, who's from the world of European golf and US golf, and Ryder Cup hero there. And then all the younger players, from Lewis Dobler to Jeffrey Guam and Kelsey Bennett. And so there's a mixture of, players that are in there. I'm the oldest by 100 years that he's playing, which is quite interesting. But I played in the very first one that Cathedral Lodge put on. So I guess I got a late invite to it, or an invite to it. And but it's marvellous to see. But the groupings today, that last group, which is Jeff Ogilvie, who's 46 years of age, Adam Scott is 43, and then Cameron Smith, who yesterday was carrying on, he's the young gun from there. He's the 30-year-old. So he's given it to the two older ones. So it'll be quite a dynamic, and it'll be fun to watch.
When we talk golf on this program, we always have Craig Moore here. Craig, talk to Paul Gow, please.
Gow, it's not a question related to the tournament. It's a moment that I had yesterday on the course at Yarra.
here we go.
It wasn't a stray drive, but it went just trickled into the rough on the right side of the fairway. We had a slow group in front of us. The group that I was playing with, two guys are on the other side of the fairway looking for a ball. It exceeded probably a 3-minute search, but I did find it probably in the 6th minute of the search.
Too long, Gowie, too long.
Way too long.
Thank you.
But what if the group in front of you is just as slow as all get out? Is there a bit of forgiveness in that moment?
It's a 3-minute rule. Yeah.
3 minutes.
Each club, it's written on the board when you start play, isn't it, Paul?
Yeah, it is. That's right. When you get to that ball, that's when the time starts.
So the birdie shouldn't count.
Nope.
He was slightly angry that his playing partners gave him nothing in looking for it either.
Yeah, what if they don't help you?
Hey, it's an interesting question, but because, if you're waiting on the group in front, like, you could just sort of stand back and have a bit of a look and knock over your ball, where you think your ball is, and then you can start. So it's a little bit of a grey area, so I see what you're saying, but it is 3 minutes and 3 minutes only.
When does the official time or the clock start?
When you get to your ball. Well, when you get
the
to that
area.
Area. Yeah. So, yeah, you pretty much know where that area is. but that's the beauty of golf, is where it's a self-governing
game. So I don't know how your moral compass was last
night. It's very poor.
Don't think he has one.
I'm going to hand the money back today.
Oh, unlikely.
Gary, who are you playing with today?
I've got Brett Rumford and Sarah Jane Smith. So, you know, all the young blokes, not all of them towed me up. So I've got a few bets going with them. They would have had a lot more drinks last night than I did. I went to bed early. I've been doing push-ups this morning. I'm going to go up to the range and hit balls early just to get their money, just to put another year on. This is the only event I pretty much play all year. So if I can towel them up, they've got nothing.
Gary, there's still a lot of talk around John Rahm, just to finish on here. Are you expecting him to sign with Liv by the end of this week, as a lot of people are?
I would, you know, it's strong rumour, and I've asked Cameron Smith and Mark Leishman this week what they know about it, and they actually know nothing about it. They pretty much only run their own teams and do what they do. So it's hard to believe they didn't know, but they, you know, they're honest guys. They said, no, we don't know anything. We're over here at the moment. And they said, well, who knows? So I'm expecting all the rumours that I've heard, and I've spoken to some few people in the US, and they pretty much confirmed it. So, yeah, it will happen. So, yeah, let's wait and see what happens. But I think what we've all got to keep in mind, there's two tours in the world. Like, see, it's up to, they're all independent contractors, all these players. They can play wherever they want. So if he chooses to play on the Asian tour or the Australian tour or wherever he wants to play, it's purely up to him.
Welcome back to the Summer Breakfast. One of the big talking points in Victoria is obviously the Commonwealth Games being dumped, and there's an inquiry happening at the moment. And one man who has been in the middle of it, the great Steve Monoghetti, spoke to the inquiry yesterday, and he joins us now. Morning, Mona.
G'day, boys. How are you going?
Very well. I mean, this is a terrible result, and now we're trying to find some answers. You and Jane Fleming, the new president of Athletics Australia, appeared at the hearing yesterday and basically explained what it was doing to our great sport.
Yeah, it was nice to be able to present, obviously, and as an Athletics Australia board director and with Jane. And, you know, we're wanting to see what we can move forward on and, you know, get the benefits of athletics into regional Victoria, you know, facilities, and just give our athletes who were obviously disappointed that the games are not going to go ahead an opportunity to get some benefits, and hopefully our sport does get some benefits out of it moving forward.
So specifically, Mona, there was a lot of infrastructure promise when Dan Andrews quickly, and as we've found out, rushed through this, we're going to do the Comm Games. What is there certain examples you're hoping can still get built?
Yeah, certainly a facility in Ballarat, so, and a Category 1 facility. I think what we tried to get across was often at a Games, and it happened after Melbourne in 2006, we don't actually get the facility. So, you know, it's a warm-up track, and then, as you know, Olympic Park got taken over by Collingwood Footy Club, and we got relocated to Lakeside. And even the Lakeside facility, often elite athletes don't get the opportunity to train on there because it's a commercial business and, you know, they need to make money. So, and the facility itself, there's no complete 400-metre warm-up track there, so it's a limited facility anyway. So it's really just trying to get what we say legacy infrastructure, but also then allowing that legacy to get athletes access to the track so that, you know, athletics is a massive sport and often it's only seen on those couple of weeks of the games, but we want it to be, you know, a community benefit. We're seeing recreational running booming around the world and here in Australia. We're seeing that runners, you know, park runs taking off. Why can't athletes have the ability to go down to their local track and do what we think's a great sport from cradle to grave?
Steve, given you're a past athlete yourself and you have a close relationship with a number of Australia's top athletes, what's been the feedback from them regarding the cancellation of the games and what that does in terms of preparation and all that sort of stuff, but also from, you know, not being able to compete in your own backyard?
Yeah, well, it's massive. And, you know, you think of something like COVID where, you know, the world was shut down and you come back out of that and, you know, we look to a four-year cycle. So, you know, you're going to a World Championships, you go to a Commonwealth Games, you go to another World Championships, then you go to the Olympic Games. So you've got a major focus every every year, and it was going to be the only multi-sport event leading into Brisbane in 2032. So you've got athletes who it might have been their last event, so they were going to retire, but you've most importantly got the aspirational people competing at regional Victoria, and then in 6 years later they're fired up for Brisbane, or you've got the inspirational athletes who see athletes in 2026 and go, wow, I want to be a part of that. Give me 6 years and I'm going to represent our country at the Olympic Games in Brisbane. So it's those things that are taken away in that pathway, and it's just nice to have a major event on the way through. As you know, as we all know, you've got to have something in, you know, you can have long-term goals, you can dream of being an Olympian, but you also need to have events like Commonwealth Games along the way just to keep that spark ignited.
Mona, we had the Gold Coast mayor come out and said, well, I tried, but it's too hard, we're out. What do you think will happen? Will we have a streamlined event somewhere where it might just be us swimming and a couple other sports, or is that your hope now?
Oh, certainly. We want an event. If it has to be scaled down a little bit, you know, there'll be some support. So obviously, you know, there'll be some money go from the international body. The CGF is really keen to get a host. We're keen to get one in Australia because, you know, we have a sense of we've let our athletes down, and we want to see if we can get an event that we can showcase that, oh, yeah, we're good hosts. You know, we're on the nose a little bit now as a host, so we've got to get that, re-establish that credibility back to, yeah. And we are great event hosts, and historically we've done fantastic jobs. You know, Gold Coast in 2018 was great. Sydney Olympics, Melbourne Commonwealth Games, a couple of the best events ever. So why wouldn't we want to get those events back into our country?
Are you confident it's not the death of the Commonwealth Games? Like, there's some who say if this one just slides by, it might never come back.
Well, you know, it's obviously an issue, and, you know, it's something that's really close to my eye. I bleed Commonwealth Games, and I certainly don't want that to happen. And, you know, I think it's also an opportunity for us as an organisation, Commonwealth Games and athletes, to just broaden our remit. You know, it's not just about a couple of weeks every 4 years. You know, there's so much more that we can do as a sport to better, you know, our profile, but also make a better effect on the communities. You know, we think athletics is a sport that everyone can do. You know, the paras, it's inclusive. There's no reason why anyone can't be involved in some athletic event. And, you know, it's important for us now to make sure we get that message across. And as a sport, we grow and prosper. Athletes at the elite level, you know, in the Para World Championships in Paris and Budapest World Championships, our athletes were fantastic. So, you know, we need to build on that now and make sure that continues into the future.
Mona, tell us your thoughts on Jen Gregson's performance over in Valencia recently. We were hoping to catch up with Genevieve, but she's not answering at the moment. Hopefully we can get her later today or maybe even tomorrow. But to come out and run 2:23.8, be the first Australian home, and she eyes a spot in Paris next year. What did you make of that performance?
I was just delighted over the weekend. Robbo running really well in Fukuoka, and then the four girls all running fantastic. The depth in Australian women's marathon running is incredible. So, and for her, she's come off two Achilles operations. I've had a couple of Achilles operations myself, and I wasn't going to run a marathon after it. So for her to be able to come back after the adversity she had, she's a tough competitor, and just great to see, you know, her coming back and running so well, and all the girls represented us with absolute terrific outcomes. And how good is that women's marathon going to be in Paris?
And you didn't give birth either, Mona.
Just our sports going well, distance running's on the up, and it's great to see. We had a terrific meet, Zatopek, on Saturday night as well at Lakeside. So things are going well, and can't wait to see you know, what we can do in Paris next year as a team.
And what we're going to see is probably the two-hour barrier gone, which I imagine at the height of your career that was the last thing you thought would happen. But, you know, science with the shoes, it's going to happen, do you think, soon, Mona?
Oh, it obviously is going to happen. Kelvin Kiptum's only ran three marathons and, you know, high 201s, low 201s, winning London, and then, you know, 2 hours and 38 seconds. I mean, it's less than 1 second a kilometre now. And, gosh, yeah, I think I may have been quoted that won't be in my life to know the time that I'll see it happen. I hope I'm not dying soon.
Is it a good thing? Are you just, that's fine? I mean, science has progressed. This is what's going to happen? Or are you a bit of the, you know, science has gone too far?
Oh, no, I absolutely love it. The attention, you know, we're talking about it. It's crossed over into the public domain and, you know, the Super Shoes, you know, one of my long-term sponsors, only 37 years with Nike. So, you know, they're the benefits, and it's great just to see people. And that does filter down to people at parkrun. And if everyone's enjoying their running and getting faster times and we're improving, then that's just great for our sport. And I couldn't be more delighted.
Have you been for your run yet today, Mona? How far do you tick over on a Wednesday?
Oh, just a lazy 10K today. But I was a bit late getting back last night, but I did a bit of... I actually had the Super Shoes on. I had the Alpha Flies on last night, got rolling, and I was running sub-4-minute Ks on the way home on my run last night. So pretty happy with that.
You're making our listeners cringe. Mona, thank you. Fingers crossed the Commonwealth Games, there's still some legacy comes out of it. Thanks for your time. Yeah.
I appreciate your time too. Thanks, boys.
Welcome back. Now we're switching gears from racing to cricket because the Big Bash is about to go bang. Starts tomorrow night, but Will Sutherland from the Melbourne Renegades joins us. He starts on Friday night. Good morning, Will.
Morning, Jen. Thanks for having me.
Sydney Sixers at the SCG Friday night. Exciting times.
Yeah, very exciting. Good opposition to come up against first, and a great venue, and yeah, always an exciting time of year, the Big Bash.
Now, there was a fair bit of movement in the off-season, trades, and there was all sorts of shenanigans. You've ended up with Adam Zampa and Nathan Lyon, but Nathan Lyon's not playing Friday night.
Yeah, that's correct. Unfortunately, he's been ruled out, obviously, with his international commitments coming up. Great pickups for us, and we're super excited to see what those guys can do during the tournament when we can get them.
Well, Victoria, you've been leading the way there. You've had a great sort of period. How do you switch so quickly back to Big Bash? Or is it easy for you being an all-rounder, or do you have to tinker with everything?
I tried to keep it more similar as the years have gone by, I think. Yeah, probably just a little tweak in the way you train and, prepare for games. And, mainly just around training, I think, because obviously there's a bit more power hitting, and then obviously you're bowling some Yorkers and fly balls rather than just, you know, the old top of off in the red ball stuff. But, not too much of a change.
Well, good morning to you. Thanks for your time. You've been elevated to vice captain. Congratulations on that. Your skipper is Nick Maddinson once again, who unfortunately did his ACL last season. How's he come back?
Yeah, good. He's moving really well. Got a lot of confidence in that knee now, and he should be right to go for the first game. So, obviously, excited to see what he can do. An amazing talent and a great guy to play under. He's created a really good environment amongst the group. So, looking forward to see what Maddo can do.
Another player that I'm certainly looking forward to, and I'm sure a number of Australians and cricket fans are, is Jake Fraser-McGurk, who's just been going bananas in domestic cricket so far this season.
Yeah, definitely. He just smashed 100 against the Vics in the first inning, so it'll be good to have him on my side rather than having to captain and watch him hit our boys all around the park. So, he's in good nick as well, and, an exciting time for Jake too.
Now, Will, what about the Dad's Army? You got Shaw, Marsh and Finchie, who we're on watch to see how the great man presents now that he's in semi-retirement. How is the former Australian skipper?
He's good. He loves the Renegades, and he's still managing to get a few runs in the Prakki match. And people write him off every year, but he always seems to come good and do well for the Gades. So I'm sure it'll be no different this year and exciting for... him and I'm sure Soss will be in good nick as well when he can get right to play.
You can add Peter Siddle to that list as well, so you certainly don't lack for experience there, Will.
Yeah, exactly, which is awesome for me, I suppose, and some of the other younger guys to try and soak up plenty of learnings from those guys and see how they go about it at this level.
How much of an asset it is having someone with the experience of Peter Siddle to be able to come in and particularly bowl at the death in those really tight situations, given his experience right around the world?
Yeah, it's invaluable, I think. Obviously, if he's at mid-off or something like that when I'm bowling, it's certainly an amazing person to lean on with so much experience and tricks there. So, I'll be leaning on that quite heavily and trying to soak it up from him.
And have you seen much of Zamp since he came home from India? I mean, he had an amazing tournament there, as we know. Have you had much to do with him or just catching up with him in Sydney?
No, I haven't seen him yet. I'll see him in Sydney. But, obviously, he's in great nick and Again, another one that I'll be trying to learn off. And, yeah, just a great pickup for us, especially at Marble, I reckon, with the sort of spin-friendly conditions. And we like to play the two spinners there, so he'll fit right in with us.
Perfect, Will. Well, good luck on Friday night. It's exciting. The TV screen's going to light up with the big bash. Thanks for your time.
Thanks, Jen. Much appreciated.